we Ohioans think Cammie belongs to us, and I know you claim her as your own, so we can share her. But she grew up, spent the first 17 years in Norwood, Ohio, which is a small suburb of Cincinnati. And when she was 17 years old, Philip Wrigley's scouts came to Cincinnati, and they found her playing for the H.H. Meyer Meatpacking Company. And her mother, at 17 and an only child, I think it was probably very difficult for her mom to allow her to go to Chicago in May of 1943 for those tryouts. But her mother later said she only signed the paper because she thought Dottie wouldn't make the team. Well, you know, history tells us Dottie did make the team, and then she helped make the team famous. So we were very connected to Dottie from the beginning because she was an Ohioan. I just thought that she would be an incredible role model for children. One of the things that struck me, obviously I knew about her accolades before I started researching her, but I didn't know about her personality. And one of the things that I heard over and over again was that she was good, but she was humble. And she was great, but she was a leader. And she was a star, but she was a veteran who helped the rookies. And I just kept hearing that over and over again. She never let fame go to her head. And she really was a team player. And I think that's a great message for kids today.
You've done a biography of her, and it is aimed at young readers.
Right.
And why do you feel like that's the right target?
The middle grade audience, I think, is a great audience to write for. Middle grade generally in the field of children's literature is defined as 9 to 12 or grades 3 through 8. With a biography like this, though, I do think it crosses across a wider age group than that, because older children will read a nonfiction book like this and find it very interesting because it's about a real person. But the middle grade reader is a special reader because they're finally good at reading. You know, you spend kindergarten, first, and second grade learning how to read. And then in third grade, kids are often put to the challenge of reading nonfiction, which is a whole different ballgame. And nonfiction has changed in the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years quite a bit, in that children's publishers are trying to put out narrative nonfiction, nonfiction that reads like a story, reads like a novel, that's loaded with pictures and text boxes and quotes and timelines and just a lot of good stuff that makes that biography really interesting to read, unlike maybe some of those biographies that you and I read as a child, where it was a thick book of all text with some black and white pictures crammed in the center because that was the easiest, cheapest way to make a biography. So the middle grade readers really are ripe for having a little more meat in their reading, and then they're also challenged at school a lot with finding nonfiction. And I think biographies were one of my favorite things to read as a kid.
Unfortunately, she's no longer with us, and so you had to take on the task of doing a biography of someone who could not give you firsthand accounts. How did you go about it?
What I found out right away about Dottie was that she was an only child, so she had no brothers or sisters that could share information with me. Of course, her parents were gone, and she was gone. So being an only child, she not only had no brothers or sisters, but there were no nieces or nephews. She basically had no family that I knew of at the beginning to interview. So it became a task to find her teammates, to find others who played alongside her, against her on other teams. And then just when I thought I had reached out to all the people that I could that had known Dottie, I found an article that talked about Kamenchek Night, which was a night that was held at Beyer Field in 1950. And it was all about Cammie that night. They honored her. And in that article, it said that an Ohio aunt and uncle and cousins had made the trip to Rockford for that evening, and it talked about an 8-year-old boy who was her cousin. So I did the math and thought, if he's still around. And then her mother's maiden name was Bandenberg, so I started looking in Cincinnati for Bandenbergs. Lo and behold, through just a crazy series of events, I did find the two cousins and interviewed them, and it was really special to me to have that one family connection, that only last family connection.
You are a regular, Nancy Drew.
I felt like a super sleuth following the clues to finding Dottie's family.
So when you started putting all the pieces together, what Was it that, what was that moment where you said, wow, I have a story here?
You know, my first three books were fiction. So, you know, it was kind of the close the door and make it all up and then fact check to make sure you didn't say anything, you know, that was truly wrong. But I was worried as I started the research for this. This was my first experience in writing nonfiction for young readers. I just felt like it was a gathering of pieces, and then an article here, and then an interview here, and I thought, how will I ever put all this together into a coherent story? And another friend that was writing nonfiction said, when the sentences start to come in your head as if you're telling a story, then you'll know you're ready to write and stop gathering. And I could have kept gathering forever. I never felt done with research. And still, now that the book is done, I'm still finding someone else who had some other piece of the puzzle or some other part of the story. So at some point, you just have to say, it's time to write. And when it became time to write, it was easy to write. The story just, I felt, flowed.
How much research did you end up doing in Rockford or with people in Rockford?
Rockford was, I felt, like my gold mine of information. And it's interesting, as the ladies of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League age and then do pass on, their memorabilia ends up in many different places. Some want it to go to Cooperstown, to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and some would like it to go to the Center for History in South Bend, Indiana, which has a large collection. A lot of the Rockford Peaches stuff is at the Midway Village Museum, which has an enormous collection. And then some of the girls from other states, their memorabilia has gone to maybe their local historical society or someplace, you know, very close to home. So it really is scattered all around. And I had tried some other places before I came to Rockford, but my first connection in Rockford was Greg Schwenke, who has been working on the renovation of Beyer Stadium. And he was fantastic. The day I was coming, he had Helen Sis Waddell Wyatt meet me at the field. I also got to meet Doug and Donna Key. And I got to meet Charlene O'Brien, who had been a bat girl for the Rockford Peaches. And that was when I truly felt like I was starting to get firsthand accounts from people that knew Dottie, from people that had met her. And then I learned of the Midway Village Museum and made two trips there. And that's where a lot of scrapbooks are held, and even beyond what the public sees in their display in their archives. So I was able to make an appointment to sit down at a table, and they brought me box after box and scrapbooks, and I was able to really dig into the history of the Peaches and of Dottie's time with the Peaches.
What's a maybe something about what the lifestyle was like then, even that?
You know, Dottie called herself in a couple of interviews that were documented, she called herself one of the first latchkey children. She lived in Cincinnati at a time when most people had two parents and mom stayed at home and took, you know, was the housewife. And her mother worked at a large factory at Procter & Gamble because Dottie's father died when she was 9. So it was just Dottie and her mom, and she would come home after school and let herself in the house. And so she did not have the typical childhood of the 1940s.
What was she really known for as a player?
As a player, she was known for being this incredible first baseman. And one of the things that she had in her favor was being left-handed. So that gloved hand was always closest to the pitcher's mound. She was also known for just being able to stretch and reach, and in the movie A League of Their Own, when Gina Davis's character kind of does the splits to catch a ball, people have said, yeah, Dottie could do that. You know, our Dottie could do that. So she was known for just exceptional skill. She also did win the batting trophy a couple of years in the league, but she wasn't necessarily the biggest powerhouse hitter in the league.
Dottie Kamacek went on to a very important career, too, and that was kind of inspired by what her body went through over the years.
Yes, absolutely. You know, she spent the rest of her life as a physical therapist, both treating patients herself, but then also as a lead physical therapist running a clinic, and was awarded for her leadership skills. She was the same person off the field as she was on the field, and that was always giving 100% to what she did.
So it must be hard to, you know, you do all that research, you write the book, and then she's on a shelf. Is there a little Cammy still in your heart?
Oh, I think there always will be now because, you know, I regret that this whole vision and this whole series and all of this didn't happen just a few years earlier. I would have absolutely loved to have sat down with Dottie and talked about her and talked about her life. But I also asked a lot of people that knew her, what would she... I told them about the biography, and I said, what would she think about a biography written about her? And a couple of times I heard, oh, she'd hate it. And I felt horrible. But then they'd say, but since it's for the children, she would love it. And so that's, you know, that's what I needed to know, was that she would approve. And I would love if I could have read her every word of this book and have had her say, that's perfect.
Is there something you wish you could ask her?
I think what's missing from the book are more memories and photographs from her earliest years. That memorabilia seems to be lost somewhere. Her high school photograph was the youngest photograph I could find of her. And so that... those items are somewhere, but I would have loved to have talked to her about her childhood. Of course, in many interviews, in many other books, she talked extensively about baseball. And from age 17 on, I was able, you know, to really find out a lot about her. But I would have loved to have been able to ask Dottie about the very young Dottie, the 7-year-old Dottie, the 9-year-old Dottie, the 11-year-old Dottie. But that I was not able to do.
Who were these girls playing baseball with at that time? You know?
Yeah, well, her earliest baseball was playing with the boys in the sand lot, mm-hmm. in the vacant lot in Cincinnati. And then after she got to high school, then playing on these industrial league teams, which were all girls. But, you know, and they were playing in an organized league against other teams. And had she not been doing that, the scouts that Philip Wrigley sent from Chicago would have never found her.
All right. Anything else about Dottie?
I think probably the urgency of getting this biography written was that because of the era that the girls played, all of the girls from the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League are getting to the age where they're approaching 80, if not beyond. And so in 15 years, these girls will all be gone, and they'll take their firsthand stories with them. And so I think it's important to get their stories now while we can.